Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Yeah, there we go. We're back. Episode number 3, Thomas Turgoose.
Back again. Number 3.
Number 3 of series.
A great guest.
Yeah, really good guest. Johnny Harris.
Yeah.
Really good subject as well.
I think we've nearly known Johnny. I nearly know Johnny for half my life, I think. I've nearly known him for as long as I've been alive, and I haven't.
Yeah, that's strange. Well, so, yeah, because we met him on This Is England 86, right? He plays Mick.
Oh, no, I'm years out. I'm absolutely years out.
What do you mean?
I need another 8 years of knowing him, is what I'm saying. But
that's good. That's bad maths, that.
That is bad maths. Not quick maths, bad maths.
We've known him.
Sorry?
12 years. We've known him probably about 12 years.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. But as Johnny touches base in the episode, it was, he's so magnetic to watch, isn't he? And when he touched base, when he came into the rehearsal rooms with us all, and how nervous he was about being with us all, but then quickly sort of adapted into the way that we all are on set.
Yeah, because I wanted to be an outsider looking in on that group.
No, especially because of how mental we all are when
that's
we're there.
What I mean, yeah, that's what I mean. Like, yeah, because when you start jobs, like, you know, when you do jobs and you go on as like a guest lead or something, you know, you'll know yourself, like, it's hard to kind of get in, not get in with a group, but it's kind of one of them, you're the outsider, aren't you? So,
yeah, and you feel like you want to be involved in everything that's going on, and you can't be.
Yeah.
To a certain extent, but it's like being a new kid at a school, isn't it? You know, if you moved to secondary school, and then when you went to, and there's a big group of people, and you're just like, oh, I just want to be mates with them.
Big school full of absolute drunks and idiots like we were back in the day.
Yeah, back in the day. No, but again, I know we say it all the time, but it's up there with one of my favourite episodes, and he's so he's very much like a bit like Shane Meadows or Joe Gilgan. Whenever he starts talking, it's like this will probably be the quietest episode, I think, from me and you.
Yeah, I think we listen most, and like I say, he's a great storyteller, and also didn't know, but what a good impressionist. Like, you guys are in for a treat if you watch or if you're listening. Like, if you literally will watch Johnny Harris turn into Shane Meadows about four times in this interview.
Yeah, it's great. He's super talented, and he's one of the most intense people I've been on around the set. He can be, you know, like you said before, he likes to be separated from people and sort of. But I mean, I guess with the character that he did play in This Is England 86 and 1988, was in 86 and 88, wasn't he? The flashbacks and things. But he's so, like, because of the character that he's playing, he really needed to take himself aside and really get into it, because he's such an awful character to play. So he's very intense. He gets the results. Mm. He looks amazing, and he is amazing, but also one of the most lovely, down-to-earth gentlemen I've ever met.
I was just going to say that, like, on the flip side of that, obviously, when he's not working, he is, like, genuinely one of the nicest blokes. Mm. And it does pay off, because, like, my missus, she was quite nervous meeting him. I always say this to him, like, when we kind of first got together, me and my missus, and we had a This Is England party or something, and she was a bit scared about meeting Johnny. Like, what? Yeah. No, Johnny's lovely. She's like, no, he's a scary man, and I'm like, oh no, he plays a scary man.
Yeah, he can be scary because he was a great boxer, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was like regional champion or GB champion or something when he was younger. I remember my dad saying something about it. He'd had a good chat with him about it. Yeah, man, not to be messed with, and so not just This Is England. I mean, Jawbone is one of my favorite films. Yeah. I was blown away by it. I think he was unbelievable in that.
Can you hear my washer? It's dead loud. Can you hear it?
No, I can't hear your washer.
Yeah, that's good then. I'm sorry if anyone listening can hear my washer. It's dead loud. It was made it. Johnny's subject obviously is fear, and fear. Yeah, you say it weird. Fear.
I say fear.
Fear, mate.
Fear, mate. Johnny's
subject is fear, and we wanted to put this one out. We were probably going to put this out a bit later, weren't we, at first? But then we decided, you know, we've had, what, 3, nearly 4 weeks of isolation now. We just got told we might have a few more, and we will have a few more, sorry. And you know, people are kind of worried and scared, and talking to Johnny in this kind of put my mind at rest a lot, and you know, not being, you know, scared of stuff that you see on social media and things like that, you know, and just being mindful of it, I guess.
Yeah, he's a very positive man, Johnny. In any aspect, he's very really negative, and I don't think I've ever heard him say a bad word about anyone ever.
No,
it was like a therapy session. I thought for me, it was very reassuring, and very switched on. And yeah, he sort of like he opens your mind up into different ways that you never thought possible, and he can really change the your thought process on a lot of things and the way that you look at things.
Definitely. So that's why we wanted to get into it this week, I guess. You, Thomas Tiggers. I was going to say something a minute ago. Oh, yeah. Let's get into the interview anyway.
Yeah.
A little bit of backstory on what we're talking about. Whenever we ring our guests on Skype, we always have a little chat beforehand, don't we? Just catch up, how are you doing and all that. While recording this one, we come in at a weird point because I pressed record because we're having such a great chat about Frey Bentos pies.
Oh yeah.
When you listen, that's what we're talking about at the top of the interview. Frey Bentos pies. So should we just stick it on?
Yeah, let's bang it on, mate. Enjoy, see you after.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You know, because he said, just, we could do it early. And I said, I've just put a pie in the oven. It'll be about 20 minutes in it. Most people would come back and sort of say, oh, okay, mate, not a worry. And then we'll get on with the show. Tom, I didn't. He just come back and went, what pie?
Yeah, what pie is it? Just so you know, we're recording now, Johnny.
I've just started recording.
On the topic of pies.
The pie chat was brilliant, so I thought I'll try and get some of it in there.
I've got calls coming through on Skype. I don't know how I stop those. Can you hear them? Yes. And they're pinging. You're not hearing
them. Not hearing anything, mate. Yeah. We're all good.
Have you got the blur background there, have you? Have you got the old...
Yeah, you can do it. Yeah. If you just go to the bottom right, you see them little three dots on your screen.
Good thing to do, is it? Yeah.
It just focuses on your pretty face, doesn't it, instead of your pretty flowers.
All right, let's do it, man. Let's get
Welcome
that.
To Overrated
there
Everything.
There you go. It's
Johnny Harris, how to do Skype.
With my sexy blurred background, man, I love it. Yeah.
For anyone who's listening, we started the Skype chat, and Johnny was telling us about his lunch, about a pie in a tin, which I strongly disagree with. What was it?
I can't believe it, man. I'm disappointed, Tom. Frey Bennett's pie. I thought it came from the north. I thought it was London's gift from the north, mate. Like at least once a week, we'd have Frey Bentos pie and chips, or Chef's Hat, my uncle called it, and chips.
Childhood meal. I learned how to cook. I used to boil some pasta, and then I used to just put a can of chicken soup into the pasta. And see that. That's what I used to eat a lot when I was a kid. Remember that?
Ah, right.
Yeah. That's why I've got a six pack. You know what I mean? That's why I'm absolutely shredded, because I was just on carbs from... your age of five, clean carbs.
Spanish. Mine was a piece of bread, and you know the square cheese that isn't really cheese, like the thin kind of plastic slices of cheese. Yeah. I used to put that on and put it in the microwave for like 30 seconds.
Yeah, man. Well, it was like, you know, last week I made my first ever stew, like my first proper stew.
You cook quite a lot, don't
actually. Yeah. I made one once before. No, I don't cook a lot. I'll tell you what it is, Tom. Right, the once in a 5 year when I do cook, I'll put it on Instagram, so it looks like I cook a lot, you know. I cook a lot. It's once in a blue moon. But to be honest, mate, this period now, this isolation, I've cooked more than I've ever cooked.
I've
got one of those slow cooker things. I've just never used it. And then, so the other week I got it out and done a stew. And then last week, sorry, I done my second one. I'd done another one, and it was, it was great. You know, but it's horrible in isolation because I'm on my own, you know, and I was looking around for a round of applause, you know. I got this stew. You know, when you're a bloke and you cook
some. Send some up to me, mate, and I'll give you one. Well played. As long as it stops you from having pie out of a tin.
How's it all going? How's the podcast? And I've been listening in a couple of times. It's great.
Yeah, it's great.
It's good.
We're loving it.
Yeah, we enjoy doing it, and it's I mean, obviously it's a bit different now because we're having to do it on the old Skype, but we enjoy it, don't we? It's a chance for us to get together and you know, meet friends or meet new people, new guests and that, and it's good. It's just we both got jobs at the end of last year, so we stopped doing it, and then every time we go to do it again, one of us gets a job, which is great, but yeah. Obviously, we want to keep the podcast going as well, so
yeah,
it's one of them.
But it's a great excuse to sort of like get people like yourself on, who obviously we've known for a long time. But I guess when we was kids, you was just sort of like looking after me and Andy Ellis when we used to come into work still drunk all the time. Whilst he was there being professional, me and Andy had come into work obviously when we was doing 86. But it's nice to like
you were outrageous, man. All of you, it was the most beautiful experience, wasn't it?
Oh, really?
What was it like
coming for you, obviously, because we'd already done the film and then you came into the series.
It was surreal. So like the film came out at the same time as London to Brighton, a film I'd done.
Great film,
All at the same festivals that year. Do you remember like the Biffa Awards and stuff? That was the first time I'd ever met Shane. And I was still drinking back then, so I don't remember it much. But I remember vividly, I think it was around the time I gave up drink, right? And I was sober, and I went to the cinema with my ex, and we saw This Is England, the film. Because I'd been meeting yous all at these festivals and stuff. Like, I've met yous all at the awards and stuff. and it was just like a great bunch, and we'd sort of party together a bit. And then I went and watched it, and it blew me apart. You know, like it was, I'll never forget it. And it's a strange thing to say, because of what happened afterwards. Like, it sounds like I might be biased, but I said it long before, and I said it publicly at the time as well. That film will always be in my top five films. It's almost easy to underestimate it, because it's so, you feel like they're your pals on the screen, you know, when you're watching like a Raging Bull or something like that. It's so kind of endemic. It's so in you, that film, that it's easy to just pass it off as being with your pals or something. It's an astonishing piece of art. It's an incredible piece of work.
I guess it really comes across on screen, because, well, you've seen it and you're part of it now. You know, we're all a family, and that's exactly how it is. And you know, when Shane says cut on set, we don't just stop being them people. Like, that's who we are. You know what I mean?
Apparently, I was one of the first people Shane ever let have a dressing room, right? And this is the reason, right? I had this amazing experience seeing the film, blew me away, and just remember thinking, something's happening here in British cinema. Something's going on. And it felt like a working class thing. It was just electric, man. It was beautiful. And I felt like, you know, I was hungry and wanted to be part of it all. But to actually then become part of the This Is England thing, I think it was like 4 years later. And it weren't really happening for me. London and Brighton had come and gone. And you know what it's like, guys. Like, I weren't really getting auditions for anything other than kind of like, you know, two lines here and there. You know, I weren't doing the kind of work I wanted to get, you know. And I was working.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it for dramatic purpose. Like, I was close to giving up. Really close. And
I think we've all been there, haven't we? We've all been there. Like.
Yeah, I've never heard an actor that's not, you know. And I was real close to it. And I was working in the Union Theatre Cafe for my mate Ian. And the phone call came through. It's an outdoor cafe. It was freezing. I remember it. I had these glove things on, and I answered the phone, and they said, Shane Meadows is going to follow up This Is England with a TV series. And he wants you to go up and audition for it. And he'd left a message saying that he thought I was too young. Like, he kindly said, look, mate, I think you might be too young, but I love what you did in London to Brighton. And you know, if you want to come up, it'd be lovely to meet you. And so that took a bit of pressure off me in a way. And I just went up and met him and then got the part. You know, I remember he rang before I'd left. Like, I was running for the train in Nottingham. It was at the Broadway Cinema where he auditioned me, and I met Vicky for the first time. And then I was running for the train after. It was raining, and I had to catch that train. I was skint. My mate Ian, who ran the cafe, lent me the money to get up there. And if I missed that train, I was stuck. I would have had to jib the train or something. And the phone went. And you know when you're like, oh, not now, you know. But I saw it was like a weird number. And you know when you just get a funny feeling, and I answered it, and it was Shane. And he went, oh, hiya, buddy. He went, listen, buddy. He went, you know, look, I know it's a long journey back, and, you know, and look, I just wondered if it might make your journey a little bit easier to say I'd love you to do the part, you know, if you'd like to do it. And I was like,
yay!
I remember, I'll never forget that train journey home, because I was in a tough time in life at that time. But you know when you just get this feeling that everything's going to be all right? And I don't mean that. I can't explain why I felt that. It weren't like it was, you know, a huge financial sum or anything like that. I just knew on some level spiritually that life was going to be okay. It was working out, and so it was weird. And so then to come up and meet you, right?
Yeah.
Came up to rehearse. So this is how I got the dressing room, right? I came up to rehearse and met you all. Remember, we had that party and everything, and we started rehearsals. And then I went back to London. After rehearsals, and I think it was a couple of weeks, and then filming was going to start, and my agent rung to go through the details of the deal, and she said, right, you're going to get paid this much, you're going to be staying here, you're going to be doing this, you're going to be doing that. She said, and by the way, with Shane Meadows, no one has dressing rooms or trailers. Like, you know, everyone just all stays together and hangs out on set and everything.
And yeah,
I
said,
okay. Now, bearing in mind, I was terrified of losing the job, right? But I thought about it, and I thought, and I said to my agent, I said, listen, you know what, I've met that gang, you know, and they're like nothing you've ever met, right? Joe Gilgan, Tom, Andy, like all of yous, right? And I said, listen, if I'm hanging around with those guys on set, there is no, I defy anyone not to laugh and have like the best time of their life, you know?
Yeah.
Guy I'm playing, I'm in a different place. Like, I can't, like, I'm just going to have, it's going to be too good a time, you know? And I've got to tap into something quite dark. And anyway, she went back to Shane, and I said, but don't, like, be careful how you tell him, you know, because I don't want him to think, who's this Donna, you know, the dressing room. Anyway, apparently Mark Herbert went up to Shane and went, Johnny Harris wants a dressing room. And Shane went, what? And he went and he explained it to him. And then Shane went, yeah, I can't argue with that. And he gave me
a fair point.
It was only a broom cupboard. I used to sit in there with my headphones.
Yeah.
And hide out the light, you know. And so I was kind of terrified of you all because you was all, you were beautiful.
Well, I guess it's kind of like, particularly for obviously your character in 86, it was like nothing else that any of us had ever experienced on a Shane Meadows set, really. And it was kind of like for what you was doing with that character, because we never had any scenes together or anything, did we? I don't think we did.
No. One scene, a tiny one, I think, you get in the back of the car, but it was a couple of seconds, weren't it?
But I remember sort of seeing you around set and seeing, you know, to the place that you was going, and it was kind of like, I never knew what it was going to be like. But then when I watched 86 and saw what you did with that, it was like, fucking hell, how can the man who's the genuinely one, and I'm not just saying this because you're here now, but I say it to everyone who I know, that you are one of the most gentle, humbling, lovely men I've ever met. And when I try and explain to people how nice you actually are, they're like, I can't believe it. So
nice.
It just goes to show what a great job you did with that, because people, you know, people sort of can't let go of what you did with that. So it really, it was fucking.
Bless you, mate. It's weird for me, because I don't look. The truth of it is, I'd love to sit here and give like some method or something, like attach what I do to some method, you know. But I don't, you know. I don't know about you guys, but I'm a magpie, man. I'll take it from anywhere, you know. I'll take a bit of this, a bit of that. Yeah. I just try and find the truth in some way. And sometimes I fail and I look a bit silly doing that on set or whatever, you know. But you've got to be willing to go there. So I don't even know what it is I do, really. So it's funny for me to hear it from your guys' perspective, you know, because I'm just kind of, you know, rattling around trying to work it out. But
you put truth into it, don't you? Sorry, mate, what was you saying?
Well, that's the best advice I ever got on acting. You know, you hear all these kind of long-winded explanations of what acting is, and someone said to me, hit your mark and find the truth, you know? And it's easier said than done that. You know, when you've got makeup and lights burning in your face and you've got the other actor doing their lines and trying to remember your lines and an accent and all of that, it's easier said than done. But ultimately, that's your job.
I remember my dad said to me from a very young age, he said three things to me about being, not about being an actor, just about being an adult. And he always said, always be on time, never be late. Always learn your lines, don't be a prick. They're the three things that he always said to me.
Yeah.
Learn your lines, don't be late, don't be a prick. They're the three things that I sort of live
by. And you've completely ignored him all your fucking life.
I've mastered two of them. I'm always on time and I know my lines, but I can't help being a prick.
You know what? I've always said it like, you know, on a good day, I believe this, like, you know, is the thing that, I've done a couple of talks at drama schools, and you're talking to students and they're like, well, what's this, what's that? And I said, listen, the first thing you need to learn, like, is the value of please and thank you, you know. I didn't learn that in a drama school. I think I learned it as a kid. And they'll get you a long way, those two things, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, I've learned it sometimes, because you know what it's like. You get some idiots in the game and who seem to be getting on and stuff in this age of sort of publicity and false publicity and stuff. But ultimately, really, like, the people who've stuck around and the people who've, like, used to's and you know, like, it's the people who are just good people, really, ultimately. Yeah. They're the people
I think that's the important thing. I think that is it. Yeah. And me and Andy was very, very fortunate that our first director was Shane Meadows. And it's like, yeah. I mean, we just learned so, so much overnight. I think you just learn so much overnight when you're working with Shane. And people like Mark and people like yourself, we learn a lot from you, learn a lot from Stephen Graham. And you're learning so much. You can be on set with a child actor who's 7 years old, and you can still learn from them. You can learn from everyone that you're meeting on set.
You've got it right there about the magpie. Like, it is like being a magpie, and it's just going, oh yeah, like, okay. Because I'm like that. I wouldn't say method, but like, you know what I mean? Sometimes you are a little bit method, and you kind of catch yourself out like, oh, that was a bit like, I've not come out of my character all day, or you know what I mean? And
yeah,
you know, making different things up.
In an interview, like, he said the whole thing's mad. Really, like, the whole thing's, but like, because someone was accusing him of being kind of mental and whatnot, like, and he said, look,
who's this? Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah.
He's like one of the ultimate examples of method, I guess, you know, one of the most acute sort of clarifying examples of a method actor. And he said, look, everything we do is ridiculous. We're pretending to be other people, you know. We're wearing funny costumes. We're Like, everything's ridiculous. What does it matter if you're in the corner doing press-ups? Or, like, the whole thing's ludicrous, really, you know? Like, and once you realise that, you know, and you sort of... Someone said, what is it? Take your craft seriously, but not yourself, you know? And
yeah.
I guess... The master at encouraging that, isn't he? Like, you know, you know, like, it couldn't be... you've all got a common purpose on that set, haven't you? Like, it's like you're all fighting for the same cause on that film. You all know why there. It feels personal, doesn't it? That whole thing that you're doing feels so personal, more than any other set I've ever had it on, to be honest.
Yeah, it's totally like particularly when you've got to take yourself to an emotional state for a job. I find that when you're on This Is England, or when we're on it, you don't even realize that you're doing it. It just happens because you're so attached to the characters. And when I see Andy Ellis upset, that upsets me.
Yeah.
You know, that me as Tomo upsets me. And when I see Joe Gilgan upset, that upsets me. So it's kind of funny, but you know, when you go onto another set and you've kind of got and you've got to take yourself to this emotional state, I find that the process of getting to these emotional states is so much harder when I'm on any other job. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then, like you said, you've got to, because I want it to be real and you want it to be truthful.
And Shane, Shane will protect that. Like anything, you know, I'll tell you what I do remember, right? Cause we didn't have scenes together, but I remember in rehearsals, we were all there, weren't we? And we all did different, Shane would send me out in the street in the character, you know, and stuff like that. But I remember there was one bit where he had all of you, like, we were all doing it. We all took turns to sit in character in a chair and the rest of the cast got to ask you questions and stuff.
Yeah.
And you lot were all asking Mick questions and you all started getting really angry at me. Like, I remember Tomo specifically started going, but why are you doing that to Lowell? Like, and then you started getting really protective of Vicky and Lowell.
It's because you get so attached to these people as characters and as your family as well, you know, like, it's such a strange thing, I think, that the whole This Is England crew, it's mental. And we were talking to Vicky on an earlier podcast, just saying how weird it'd be to go back now, having learned so much as actors now, because we've all grown up and we've got kids and houses and we take our jobs more serious. Now I wouldn't dream of going out on the piss now if I know I've got work the day after. Whereas This Is England, it's sort of like it is the done thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas now it'd be interesting because I don't know. I don't know how I would cope.
And that was the thing though, was it in a weird way, like, and I'm very, very careful when I say this, like, because there's no excuse for bad behaviour on a set. However, the atmosphere and the spirit on This Is England was essential to it. Like the fact that that's what I meant about how I had to be separate from it. It wasn't like, oh, I don't want to be with those guys. Like, it was that infectious spirit was the infectious spirit that's on the screen. Like, you believe it on the screen because it's real. And, like, you guys were like that constantly, all the time. It was fluid. It was fluent. And there was almost no gap between action and cut. And it just all blurred into one. And so that's why I couldn't be around it. It was so real. It was so kind of, it was beautiful. And it was lovely, wasn't it? And
It really is. It's like no other job. But that we've spoke more, I think, about This Is England now than we ever have done on any other episode. But I mean, it's great. It's great to have you on. But what we do every episode is obviously we get a guest to come on with a subject that they feel is overrated. And when we was on the phone the other day, me and you, and we had a chat, we came up with a few different ones, but the one that you settled on was which one did you settle on?
I regret it now. I went with fear.
You love fear.
Fear is overrated, man. It's probably the most overrated thing on the planet, isn't it? You know, like fear. It's an imposter, isn't it? You know, and so I went with that, and then I was chatting with Vicky earlier because, like, you know, you guys know Vicky's like my closest friend on the planet. You know, we speak every day. She's my closest mate. And so we were laughing earlier, you know, because she was telling me her choices. And I went, oh, no. I said, I think I've gone all serious and I've gone.
No, it's all good. Yeah. I mean,
yeah,
but that's the beauty of it. Like, we have different, you know, we have people come on with like really serious stuff like this. You know, people have come on and spoke about all sorts really kind of serious stuff. And then some people come on and speak about like Stephen came on and spoke about fine dining. You know, Vicky's was centre parks. Like, it doesn't matter. They can be ridiculous. They can be specific. They can be serious. Like, you know, it's just the nature of it, I guess.
I'm a male in his 40s. Like, you know, so from I'm at that stage of life where everything's overrated, you know. There comes a point where you cross a line where you become a belligerent old fart, you know, and just everything's overrated. So if you tell me something, I can tell you why it's overrated. But fear's kind of like, you know, and I'm thinking about it at the moment, obviously, you know, like in a time where there's justified kind of fear. Like, and that's the problem, you know, like you've got to work out the difference in life between fear and prudence, you know, because fear's around for a reason. You know, it helps you to, you know, if you're in a jungle and a lion's running after you, fear will be a good thing. It might get you that extra yard, you know. But, you know, let's face it, 90% of the times, like, you know, in our society, certainly the Western society, you know, we live on fear, you know, and so much of it's empty and hollow. And there's a great Mark Twain quote, and he said, I've lived through some terrible, terrible things in my life, and some of them even happened, you know. The rest of them are in my head.
Yeah.
And it's like, it doesn't exist. And Tomo and I were laughing. We were talking about the Ian Brown's F-E-A-R, you know, fear.
Yeah, it's a great track. I've been listening to it pretty much on repeat since you sent it to me. I love it.
Cool tune, isn't it? You know, but just the whole thing, like that song, breaking it down into sort of anachronisms and stuff. And, you know, it's an imposter, isn't it? Like, you know, fear killed more dreams than failure ever did, you know, like
I guess it's kind of like, but it's sort of, it's forced onto us nowadays, though, I think, particularly with social media.
Yeah.
It's like, when all the, you know, everything that's going on at the moment with COVID-19, it is literally when it all started, I had my phone in front of my face and I was reading all these things on Facebook that might not necessarily be true. There's a lot of bullshit behind it, but it was scaring me. I was genuinely getting in bed at night and I was thinking, I've read all this, I've read all that, and now I've got a headache and I don't know what's going on because have I got it? And it's like everything that you're reading online. Yeah. It's just people are out there being scaremongers. That's what they're doing. They're out there and they get a buzz off sharing bullshit news that really can affect people. Do you know what I mean?
And some of that, you know, like on some deep, deep level that I kind of, you know, there's people who are a lot more eloquent than me that can explain it. But like, you know, that's just because they're in fear and their little way of controlling the world that they fear so much is by going out and causing fear, you know, and like, you know, that's their way of taking control in it. A strange.
So they're not alone in fear.
Yeah, it's like, you know, they don't even know they're doing it. It's not like this is the problem. I think it's so much of it is subconscious. We don't even know it. And even before the internet, let's face it, our media, the very thing that we see probably more than anything else in the world, you know, that box in the corner of our room, it's in our front room, probably more than our families. And, you know, like we sit with that box in the corner of the room. And don't even get me started on the shit rags and I won't swear, but you know, like, but you know, like the tabloid newspapers and stuff, like, you know, and we've all got friends who work in those things and stuff, like, you know, but it is what it is, man. There's no point dressing it up as anything. It's not, they're scaremongering. That's how they exist. Like and that's not a conspiracy theory. That's a fact. Like, they exist. Yeah. It's like these radio shows that stir up debate, you know, and it's like, let's get to the truth. And, you know, you could go on there with any subject. They will find a debate in it. They will find a way of stirring up fear within it because it causes debate and it keeps them in a job and it gets people buying newspapers. And, you know, and then there's all sorts of theories that goes even bigger, you know, that helps the system that we have stay in place, you know. But ultimately, for whatever reasons they do it, whether we understand them or not, those newspapers pump fear into us every single day.
Daily.
Like, massively. And there's no way out of it. And so, therefore, our whole subconscious is full of fear. We wake up with it sometimes. Like, you know, it's just on us constantly. And it's interesting now. I don't know about you guys, but this kind of isolation period. And, you know, I've kind of got a little understanding of it anyway because I've just – my life's evolved that way. You know, I've explored things like meditation and stuff for a while now, you know. But and at the risk of sounding sort of pious and hippie and whatnot, you know, it works in my life. Like, you know, letting go of fear, you know.
Well, that's the thing that you've got to do as an individual. You've got to find something that, whether it be sitting on a computer game, whether it be sitting and doing a puzzle, whether it's sitting and meditation, if you can find something that takes you away from the fear that is literally forced upon us throughout the day, then that's great. Do you know what I mean? You can find solace in that 1 hour of meditation or 1 hour of playing a computer game.
Well, one of the you know, the most powerful sources of faith, like, because faith is the opposite of fear. The only thing that can beat fear is faith, you know, in something. And so one of the most powerful sources of that is community, is connecting with others. And so, you know, the main problem there is if you look at these papers consistently throughout history, doesn't matter which section of society were the then immigrants, whether it was the Irish or whether it was then the Indians or the West Indians or, you know, the Eastern Europeans or, you know, like whatever section of the community, the papers were pumping hatred at us. What they're saying ultimately is you are different. You are different. You are different. Do not trust this section of people. They're taking your jobs, they're robbing your homes, they're, you know, and it keeps everyone separate. And so, you know, if we're all kept separate like that, then it's hard to have faith, you know, if you don't know each other. We're in an age where, you know, most of us don't know who our neighbours are, you know, and so there's some amazing stuff coming out of this thing now, you know. We all know that
some great stuff.
Yeah, you know, there's some, like, that NHS clap.
Yeah. It's amazing.
I spoke to my neighbours, like my two neighbours who are lovely, and I've, you know, deliberately got to know them, and Kat and Harry, and I said to them, you know, or they said to me, are you going out tonight? And I said, yeah, absolutely. But my cynicism and my fear, see, here you go again, my fear was saying, well, it'll only be us out there, you know, like, but I said, yeah, I'm going out, even if it's just us three, let's go out and do it. And we live in these blocks, so it was just us talking about it. And then we went out at 8 o'clock, the whole block.
I saw on your Instagram. It was amazing.
I mean, honestly, I got emotional. My sister's working on the front line. You know, she's not NHS, but she's a manageress of a Boots chemist. You know, and she's there with people screaming at her, and you know, and all of that. And I thought of her that night, and I heard that applause, and I got emotional, mate. You know, and came into my flat that night. I don't know about you, but I was buzzing. I was alive, and I'll tell you what, I was fearless. I was fearless. I believed in my community around me. I believed in, you know, people and my sister and things like that. And I felt full of faith.
Yeah. And it's good. It's good that things like that, like I remember when I first saw the poster that had been posted on Instagram that on the Monday, everyone was going to clap for the NHS at 8 o'clock. And I thought, oh, that's a great idea. That's a great. And then suddenly that then snowballed and everybody was sharing it. Everybody knew about it. And I was thinking, this is the shit I want to see.
I want to see this.
Yeah. I want to go on my Instagram and see, wow, that's happening. Or something else came up on mine earlier on that there was a very small cul-de-sac and there's a little lonely old lady, and they created a WhatsApp group of, I don't know, maybe eight or nine neighbours. And this little old lady, she said she was really struggling. She was really lonely. So what these guys did is they went onto the front in a distance, and they all had a cup of tea and just chatted with each other with this old lady who was said that she was struggling and she was feeling lonely. And I thought, well, that's such a great, like, it's such a great thing for the community to do to actually help each other. Do you know what I mean? Instead of just going, oh, miserable Barbara at 94, you know, she's fucking Mardy.
Yeah.
You know, it's nice that all these things are. They're the only things that I'll share on social media, like the clap for the NHS and the good news and the progress that the NHS are making with the virus. I'll avoid all the bad news, because that's what society is at the minute. It's just full of bad news. So, you know, if you can try and share a good bit of news, then you certainly should, you know.
We've got a common peril for the first time in our generation, really. I'm thinking, like, you know, unless it's sort of... like, you know, you get other examples, like there's, you know, like if it snows or something, for example, you just feel a bit of a difference in the air. We've all got a common problem. Like sometimes you see people nodding at each other in the street when it snows, and because we're all surprised by this common event, you know.
Yeah.
On a more sort of a dark level, you know, wars bring people together, like things like that. When there's common tragedy, common, it brings qualities out that we just never knew were in people. Our family members, we see people in a different light. And I think with this thing, it's the first time in probably our generation where we've had a genuine common peril. And also because we're all going through it.
The whole world as well. Yeah. Like, it's never been the whole world either, has it, I guess? Do you know what I mean?
There's a genuine sort of threat, and there's, you know, and we're right to fear it, you know? Fear is a fear. Like, it's like anything. I'm not saying, like, don't have fear. I'm just saying it's overrated.
Like you said,
to wash your hands, great, you know? If fear makes you be careful, if it makes you look out for your neighbour, great, but it's like for every sin there's a virtue, and the line between the two is always blurred. One minute you're sitting in happy solitude and you're thinking, I could do this for the rest of my life. Without even knowing it, it's turned into isolation and fear.
Yeah.
And you don't know how, like, you know, and it's the same with, you know, love and lust, or, you know, with, like, with anything. Like, you know, one minute you're in the virtuous sort of version of it. And then if you're not mindful, you know, you've slipped into, well, it's human actually to go that way. But we need to be mindful of it so we can get back. And it's very difficult to do that when en masse, the majority of our mainstream media and politics, you know, are pumping fear at us. I'm even, to be honest, I loathe politics, loathe it with a passion. I loathe all of them. It's the truth of it. You know, I'm a staunch Labour voter, you know, but the whole Blair thing even rocked that for me, you know, like, just, you know, like, so politics in general for me is it's something I leave to other people in many ways, but, and it's not apathy, you know, I feel deeply passionate, but it really upsets me. But even that at the moment, you know, even our politicians, they're not just doing this childish, like tiring, childish, energy sapping, soul destroying, shouting across the room at each other, where we're all watching it and just it's breaking our souls, I think, because these are the are meant to be leading us. And at the moment, even they're talking with a common purpose, you know, even like Boris or whoever, you know, like, you know, there's a chance here. I'm not saying we'll take it, and I'm not saying it will go that way, but there's definitely it's the biggest chance we've ever had of change, ever.
I've said this a couple of times, probably on the podcast now to a few people, but the way I'm seeing this, hopefully, is, you know, when, like, you see in films, or you might have heard of a friend or someone who's had, like, a bit of a health scare, you know, the doctor said, oh, if you don't stop smoking, you're going to get this or whatever. This is like humanity's health scare. This should be now us going, right, no, we need to live every day now. Like, it's the best, like, you know, after this. So hopefully things will change and we'll treat the planet a bit better. And, you know, because things like global warming, a lot of people don't, you know, kind of think, oh, it's years away. It's not. Like, this should now show us that catastrophe can be tomorrow, you know, whether it's another pandemic or it's war or whatever, you know, it's, hopefully, people will grow from this, I think.
It's a chance, man. Like, you know, look, the reality of it is we're probably going to take some bits and leave some bits behind and go back to normal and on other bits and whatever. But there is genuinely a chance. I think for the first time ever, probably in most of our lives, we've had a little taste of it, of what it might be like. You know? It's hard when, like, in everyday life, right, if you've got some sort of left winger or some sort of spiritual guru spouting this stuff and saying, well, this would be lovely and that would be lovely, it's very hard to even contemplate it when you've then got that hub and that machine pumping the other message at you, saying, no, you need more, you need this. But at the moment, we're all trapped at home. There is no mythical race out there at the moment that we're missing out on. There's no mythical party out there that we're missing out on. You know, there's no money out there to be chased and earned, because we all need it, because the papers are telling us we do, because we haven't got the same amount as flipping Kardashian or whoever. You know, like, I don't even know the girl, so I shouldn't say that. But you know what I mean.
No, you're right. Because, like,
you know, this mythical competition that's pumped into us. And at the moment, there is no competition. We're all in the same boat. Everyone. Yeah. We're all in the same boat. And it's like I think I even get it now, just sitting at home on my own, with nothing really to do, you know, other than stay calm, help me little family, you know, my mum lives up not too far, you know, like little things where you go, right, that's all we've got to do and that's it. And then out of nowhere, you'll go to bed. Some nights I can go to bed with complete faith in the world, you know, complete faith. I put my head on the pillow and I wake up the next morning and I don't know what's happened overnight and I don't know how they've climbed into my ear or whatever, but it seems like people have climbed in and it's turned into World War III and I wake up in fear again. And it's like, and that's when I have to do things to combat that, like meditation and stuff, just to get myself centered back and go, no, hold on, everything's okay. I woke up the other morning feeling like, you know what, this is all very lovely and it's all good and whatever, but I do need to be doing things. You know, I've got to write King Lear, or I've got to fucking, like, there's things I've got to be doing. And then I was reminded again, no one's doing anything. And I think that's really helpful, is knowing that it's happening en masse everywhere, that we're all in this period of just all we have to do at the moment is nothing.
And it's a weird time. It's like when there isn't a global pandemic, if you sit around the house all day and do nothing and don't get dressed until 3 in the afternoon, you feel guilty about doing that. Whereas now it is literally, it's guilt-free time to spend time with your families and communicate with people. Obviously, we can't do it face-to-face, which is a shame. But, you know, even like us catching up now over this, you know, it's a great time for people. Like, you know, the This Is England group chat thing we've got going on, which Johnny's not part of, actually. I didn't think about that.
I haven't got a single one. Yeah.
But, you know,
I'm going to join that one then.
Yeah, we'll get
in it, straight get
after.
In it, yeah.
Well, but everyone's getting these group chats and everyone's becoming closer and everyone's sort of spending more time wondering how everyone's getting on. Do you know what I mean? Because we've got nothing but time to check in on each other. Yeah. So the whole fear of everything that's going on outside, the good is happening inside, I think. And it's good that the public are finally listening, that you need to stay inside. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, go on, Andy. Go on, mate.
I was going to say, for my like personal one with that, like you say, like, you know, I'm kind of lucky in a way because with our kind of job, we do kind of spend a lot of time at home and then we go away for a little bit and whatnot. But I'm spending time like with my family. Like, you know, there's the four of us. We're all stuck in together, and it's like, you know, I'm teaching my little girls things that I wouldn't have time to do. You know, we've been doing this and that, and I think obviously, like I say, I've always kind of had that anyway. But there's probably fathers and mothers out there that work 9 to 5, office jobs or whatever, who have now got that with the kids. And it's such a nice thing to be a part of, I guess. Like my little girl, my oldest, because she'll remember it. She'll always remember this as probably one of the happiest times of her life, I think.
Mm.
Which is amazing. She'll always remember that long summer that she had off school. And we just played all day and we watched TV and we baked. Do you know what I mean? And that's the nice thing, I guess, from it. Do you know what I mean?
Well, any change is instigated out of love. Like you can't demand people change. You just can't. You can't have a war for peace. It never works. You know, like it simply doesn't work as a philosophy. So, you know, it will always grow again. And you know, any real fundamental, genuine change comes out of experiencing the good version, you know. So like you can't say this. Like I heard a guy today, right? I went out today for the first time in 10 days and I went and got my little food shop and you know, and it was silent out, you know, like, and I live in the Elephant and Castle, like I live in a busy, very sort of, you know, heavily populated area of London, you know, and it was quiet out, you know, the air feels clean. Like the air just feels clean. No scientific fact to back that up. All I'll say is the air felt clean, you know. And I was walking up, you know, and it was kind of silent out, and people were queuing up orderly outside the supermarket because we have to keep distance. This thing's forcing us to do it, and so that was nice seeing people queue up in an orderly fashion, you know. Okay. But a guy went past in a car and he was stopped at the lights, right? And he had this kind of very, very intense music coming out, right? It was by anyone's, it doesn't matter what genre it was, but it was aggressive, you know. It was like, I heard the word bitch like four times, you know, when you're just like, it was dense music. And now you could try and force that guy in a sense, like I would want to impose my will on that and go, mate, turn the music off, will you? We're not in the ghetto, you know, like there is no ghetto. If you feel like you're in the ghetto, it's in your head. Because at the moment, everyone's just relaxed and calm. And there's bigger problems, like, you know, it just right sizes everything. And I think, like, you know, you can't tell people what to listen to, what not to do, what not ever. I think people have just got to slowly enjoy the silence.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe that guy will eventually be overcome with that and think, you know what? I quite like being in peace. I don't want.
It's a very calm time.
Yeah,
things are very calm, aren't they? And I've noticed that people are very people in the streets. If you are queuing for the supermarket, people are being really friendly and gentle, and caring about each other, caring about strangers and people they don't know.
Yeah,
you know. Whereas it could have gone the other way. It could have gone people badging everyone out of the way. God, I need to get this.
Yeah.
Whereas it seems like now everyone's taking it serious and everyone's on the same sort of page that. People just, yeah, like you said, people just want a bit of calm and tranquility and just try and put whatever's going on to the back of their minds.
That's a good example. I think if I'm right, like, and again, we're generalizing here, but, and again, it's that fear machine that tells us the news. Like, I stopped reading the papers genuinely. I genuinely, like Vicky, I tell you this, I stopped. It was a decision almost, like about it's got to be 5 years ago, something like that. Like it's a good period of time now where I deliberately made a choice not to read the newspapers. Now I'm on social media. I've got Instagram and I've got, you know, and a Facebook where I keep in touch with my friends and family. But like, so roughly speaking, like I'm going to see the news. Like the fear is then is that I'll miss out on something. You know, I'm going to miss out if I don't read the news and, you know, or whatever. And it's just not true. I can't quantify, like, you know, there's certain celebrities and that I don't know the name of. I like that. Like, I love it. Like, Vicky winds me up about it, you know, because she'll say to me, oh, have you heard what's happening? Well, I don't know who that is. And she laughs. I know it's true. And then she laughs. She winds me up. She thinks I'm a miserable old git. But the truth of it is, like, it makes me really happy not to know. I don't really want to know.
Ignorance is bliss almost.
I don't know that nonsense. It says there's a great old Smith song, Panic on the Street.
Yeah, Panic on the Streets of London. Yeah.
And then there's a lovely line. He says, hang the blessed DJ because the music that he constantly plays, it says nothing to me about my life. And that's the media for me. Like, hang the blessed media because what they pump down my throat, it says nothing to me. It doesn't matter to me how many millions Simon Cowell's worth. It means nothing to me. You know, I want to know how my sister is. I want to know how my nephews are. I want to know how Vicky's getting on today. You know, like does my neighbour need a little bit of food? You know, like real things. And I don't want to set myself up as like angel here. We're all in this world. We're all, you know, like I'm as fearful as the next man. This is what I'm saying. There's no such thing as the absence of fear. Someone said that courage is not the absence of fear. It's doing things despite fear. You know?
Yeah.
Just think, once you do that a few times and you break the myth, you know, and it's a daily thing. Like I say, I can have this nailed some days. And think, I've got this sussed, I'm fearless, and the world is a beautiful place, and it's going to give to me as much as I give to it, and I believe in that, you know, as much as I, the next day I'll be full of fear again, you know, because that's just, but on a daily basis, the more fear I've been able to put aside, some of the greatest things I've ever done in my life, the experiences I look back on and think, like, I can't believe that's possible, including This Is England, including all of those things. That's why Shane's such a great director. Is what he does is he removes the fear for you.
Yeah.
Let's face it. I've worked with other directors and they kind of bring fear to the set a little bit. And it stifles everyone, you know. Whereas Shane's kind of like, yeah. I always remember when we'd done that exercise where you guys were asking me questions and everything. And I was sitting there and I got quite tense, right? You know, because there was an energy. You guys were attacking me. And I remember getting a bit tense. And I'd wanted to try this thing with my jaw, you know, this thing that, it's like I got an uncle who does it. And I just kind of thought up. And I tried it once before on another project. And the director belittled me. I was like, I was unknown as an actor. And the director made a joke. He said, what's that thing you're doing with your jaw? And I said, oh, it's something when he gets tense. I'm wondering if it might work. And they just laughed at it and went like, no, it looks a bit weird, mate. You know, and I didn't. I was too young to, or too immature or too scared, too fearful to argue, you know, or to make my point. Or to be brave enough to try it. And so I just let it go. And it embarrassed me a bit. So I never did it again. And then during that exercise with you lot, something happened where I was getting tense. And I just did it. I started to do it, you know, and the breathing thing. And
I remember the breathing so vividly. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. And Catherine
so started, vividly.
Done the beard because I'd seen a postcard of the screen, Monk's painting the screen. And he's long. And I remember Catherine angled the beard downwards and we started to find the character and then I started doing that jaw thing in the rehearsal and this long place you lot were all getting angry with him and then Shane called cut and he went, what's that thing you're doing with your chin, buddy, with your jaw? And I thought, oh no, in my head I thought, ah, oh. And I went, yeah, no, don't worry about it, it's all right, it's just something I was trying, but I can get rid of it. He went, no, more of that, buddy, it's terrifying. He said, I love it. And he just encouraged me.
Your
Shane
impression's amazing, man. Yeah, it's so smart.
Yeah, it's wonderful,
isn't it? It's just like watching Shane appear out of nowhere.
He does a good one of me, apparently. He kills me, apparently.
And, I always get scared when people say, oh, my mate does a great impression of you. I'm like, oh my God. And then you watch it like stopping like me.
But no, that's it. The fear.
He took fear away. You know, he took fear away, and then like you feel like you can fly. You know, it's like you know, and fear, man. It's, you know, look, the more I've let go of it over the years, and I've worked hard at it. You know, it was kind of part of you know, I won't go too much into it, but like part of me getting sober, really. You know, like because I didn't realize I was scared. That's the other problem. I grew up as a kid. I'd found all sorts of ways to say to the world, I'm not scared. You know, I was a champion boxer at 16 and, you know, and if you'd have looked at me on the outside, you know, national champion as a boxer, then became kind of an actor, you know, performing in front of people in little theatres and stuff. And you'd have looked at that bloke, and especially if I had a drink in me, you know, like, you know, we all think we're Superman when we've had a beer, you know, but you'd have looked at him and thought, he's fearless. He's fearless, you know. And all the men I grew up with, I looked at and thought, they're fearless. That is fearlessness. You know, I grew up in quite a sort of, you know, aggressive area, really, you know, and you'd sort of look at those people and think they're fearless. And the more I've kind of got sober, I guess, and the more I've kind of explored this principle of fearlessness and fear and faith, I realized I was terrified as a kid. Terrified. The reason I went to that boxing club, it's the reason I wrote my film, Jawbone, is because that place was like my church. That place was the place I went to. I didn't know this. I just went there and punched a bag. But when I look back on it now, with the knowledge I've got now about things like meditation and things like that, I realize that that boxing club was my church. When you're in that ring, they like, because they say meditation is, in the dictionary, one of the definitions of it is a period of concentrated thought. That's it. You don't have to be wearing robes. You don't have to be sitting cross-legged. You don't have to be on top of a mountain. It's a period of concentrated thought. Read a book. Yeah. Listen to
a book. Go for a run. Anything.
What you listen to.
I watched, as random as it sounds like, I find I used to hate doing it, washing pots. But now I use that now. Like, you know, I'll be like, I'll do the pots. And I'll just stand there for a good 10 minutes. And it's just like concentrating on that. And that's all I need to focus on. And it's so... It's you know, it's the most boring of tasks that you have to do, but it actually,
you know,
at
what?
The end of it, like,
no, that's the reason I want to write Jawbone. You know, people think maybe it's a boxing film. It's not. It's a spiritual film. And the reason it's that is because I realized once I learned it in later life in sort of sobriety, I kind of I realized then that boxing club, you know, when someone's throwing punches at you in the ring, you know, you're not thinking about 2 seconds ahead or what happened this afternoon. You're totally in the present, you know, because that spirituality is based around is living in the present moment and not living in the future, because you'll fear it. You fear things that aren't even going to happen, you know, or you'll be full of shame or remorse about things in your past. But, you know, when you're in the present, everything's perfect. Everything is perfect. When you're in the present moment, like right now, you need nothing else. You might want more. You might want to win the lottery. You might want to get the girl. You might want to get all of these things that Hollywood tell you this is going to make you happy. If you if you you know, win the world title, if you do this, then you'll be happy. It's a myth.
Happiness is in the journey, right? Happiness is the
believe me, like, you don't have to trust your own journeys to pull from. But all of us, anyone who's listening to this, like, if you think about your, like, right now in this moment, you've got everything you need. And I don't say that flippantly. Like, I've been skint. I've been more skint than most in some time in my life. Like, you know, like I'm from a working class background. You know, we all are, like, you know, so I'm not saying this flippantly. It ain't about that. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking right here, right now. If you've got a faith in something that's bigger than yourself, you'll realize you're okay. You're okay right now. And if you're able to sit with that without the fear, you will find the next right step to take in life. You will find it. But fear, when it's pumped at you, man, it will cripple you. You know, sometimes you can't even get off the couch for fear. It's like procrastination, like, or sloth was the old word for procrastination. Someone said it's sloth in five syllables. It's the same thing, you know, and it looks like laziness. You know, when you see someone who's slothful or procrastinating, you know, and they're on the couch and you think, well, get up and write that book, you lazy git, whatever. It's not laziness. It's fear of living.
Yeah, something's holding them back. I can't write that book. I'm too young to do that, or I'm too old to do that, or I'm too big to go and do that. It's
because you feel like you're not good enough. And that's why it's hard when you've got the newspapers saying, well, these people are brilliant. These people are beautiful. And these people have, you know, got billions. And these people are great. And these people are doing things you could never dream of. It's all making you feel like you're not good enough.
But go on.
No, that's what we're realizing now. The people
exactly.
The people who deliver our letters, the people like my sister on the front line in boots, the chemists and the NHSs and the, you know, now we're realizing where real value is. You know, where's the worth in what those people are earning millions around? What's it worth now? Nothing.
They're still sat in isolation, exactly the same as us.
You know, someone gets entertainment from it or something. I don't know, you know, but like, where's the real tangible worth of it now? You know, like, I'll tell you where you're going to find your worth now is your friend or your family member who's going to be there when you're a bit down, you know, like, and you know, I'm getting heavy, aren't I?
No, genuinely, mate, I could I was just literally thinking just then I could listen to you talking all day because you're talking so much sense and the respect that you have for people is like, it's just admirable, really. But it's true what you say about the media and how they portray, they can make people feel like they're not good enough. Young girls, for instance, say they're seeing all these big superstars in LA with the lip fillers and the bodies that are all perfect and the really long, beautiful hair. And then there's young girls who haven't got the money or the resources for that. So they feel inadequate. They feel like they're not good enough to be out on the street. And then that can spiral into a whole different state of depression and anxiety and things like that. And I guess that's what the media and social media are doing, is they're just contributing towards the downfall of society in a way for the people who are vulnerable to it. Do you know what I mean?
Social media is interesting, isn't it? It's like, it's beyond my scope. I don't know what I'm talking about really, but the idea that at least with that, there's balance. Like when it comes through a sort of a channeled media, you know, like let's say for argument's sake, just to keep the numbers simple, let's say you've got four national newspapers and two television channels, you know, when that's your sole mode of information, your sole mode of communication, then you can only hope that those people are virtuous and good and wanting good for everyone else. Because if they're not, we're in trouble. Because there's nothing to balance. Those sources of media say this is bad and that's bad and you should be scared of this. There's nothing to counterbalance it and go, well, hold on, we're going to be all right here. You know, like there's no balance really to that. There is with good media and good journalism, and I'm a great fan of that. I think, you know, when a kind of a channeled media like that, you know, with great journalism, I'm talking about people who can really write and people who, you know, have achieved some sort of awakening in life where they're able to report with balance and with faith and with hope, and they can report the stuff that we're meant to be fearing, you know, but they do it with balance then, and balanced journalism is a wonderful, wonderful thing. But we don't have that in the majority now, I would say, of our journalists. And so the social media thing's interesting. It's like the Wild West at the moment.
It's a free-for-all, isn't it?
Everyone's fighting for land. You know, it's like, you know, we've all rushed over to America and all trying to grab our little acre. You know, it's like it's chaos, like, you know. But maybe out of that, at least there's hope in that in some ways. Maybe not, but the people like the trolls and the, you know, you're never going to scream at them enough. You know, like you can smash those guys in the face in anger. You're confirming their own self-loathing, really.
Yeah. Really.
If someone's fucking them, listen, we've all kind of been there in our own ways. I've never done that, trolling, because it's never been my thing. But, you know, we've all in our own ways degraded ourselves in life in some way or another, right? We just have, in one way or another, whether it's with booze, whether it's with whatever, because on some levels we feel like we're self-loathing or we're not good enough. We've all gone through those stages in our life, you know? And if someone during that time has a go at you and says, you see you, you're disgraceful, you're letting your family, you know, if anything, it just confirms your self-loathing. The most painful thing that someone can do in that time is turn around and say, I love you, you know? Someone said to me once, I'm not religious, you know, I'm spiritual, you know, I don't even know if I'm spiritual. Look, I'm a human being who explores certain spiritual principles because they work, you know. And someone said to me once, and I was really down on my luck, and it's kind of like what my film Jawbone's about. It's all about that. And and someone who I love very dearly said to me, he said, I love you and God loves you, and there's nothing you can do about it. You can carry on killing yourself, you can carry on smashing yourself to pieces, but I love you and God loves you, and there's nothing you can do about it. And it's that. Love's the thing that will change people. It really will.
Yeah.
Anyone who's been worth anything in history, in my book, just, you know, there are capitalists out there, maybe disagree. They've got their own heroes. That's fine. I defend their right to have that. But for me, anyone in history who's worth two bob has come from that angle. I don't care who it is. Gandhi, John Lennon, you know, anyone, like anyone. Great, great spiritual leaders, Buddha, Muhammad Ali, you know, Malcolm X, or you know, Martin Luther King, Dylan, you know, like anyone who's got anything really worthwhile listening to has often always said that love is the answer. And I just believe those guys more than I believe my media. The answer is going and bombing the arse out of someone or pouring bombs down on kids. And I just don't believe that's the truth, I'm afraid. And
no, and it's not the right way to go about it, I don't think. And it is amazing how they get away with that. I just, what would it take for them to stop, particularly with the things that that these tabloids are printing? They've got, there's no fact behind them, and they're openly able to abuse certain celebrities and people in the limelight to the point where, you know, people's lives are being taken and nothing's happening to these people. You know?
But something is happening, and it's not a good thing. And what's happening is people are still buying them.
So,
it's not always a positive thing that happens. We have to accept that, man. We're flawed as people. It's in our nature to be. I said, for every seven virtues, there's seven sins. Like my ludicrously simple understanding of it, and I don't, you know, shout, like, this is not something I'm professing onto other people. I'm just saying it keeps me happy in life, you know. But there are seven sins and there are seven virtues, you know. Like, there's love, whatever they are, you know. Like, on the sinful side, you've got anger, jealousy, envy, you know, sloth. On the virtuous side, you've got patience, tolerance, kindness, love. You know, you've got seven of each, roughly speaking, to keep it simple. And each day is a battle, I guess, or a dance between the two. And we all wake up with a choice each morning to say, you know, I'm feeling angry, I'm feeling this, I'm feeling that. But what I really want to be is charitable. I want to be helpful. I want to be happy, you know. I want to be happy. And, you know, like that, for example, helping others. You know, I never realized that, it's probably the greatest source of happiness you will ever tap into. I never realized that, because I grew up with the opposite mantras. I grew up with the kind of mantras that all my parents, like my mum and my uncles and everyone, we all grew up with that thing of, like, you know, you keep yourself to yourself. If someone hits you, you hit them back twice as hard, you know. You know, you know, don't share your secrets. And like, that's the stuff that will kill you. You know, I learned that in later life. Like, the virtues say the opposite. The virtues say share, build community, you know, help others. You know, like faith, hope and charity, really. That's the sort of pyramid that most spiritual faiths are built on. Faith, hope and charity. Keep a clean house, trust God and help others. So, you know, trust something bigger than you. We're all having to do that at the moment. We're all having to trust something's going to get us through. You know, trust in that and help others where you can. And if you've got something that's really a dark secret or something that you need to get it out, you know. Whereas what we've got with our media is like this shame culture. You know, they're constantly shaming people for their sexual things or whatever. And it's like, rah. And then we're all laughing at those people. And it's horrible. Like you said, this, I don't want to mention names because it's, you know, but people taking their lives recently and that. And it's like this shame, like shaming people and saying they're different from us. And they're not. Whatever that young girl went through recently, we've all gone through it at some point.
100%. Yeah, 100%. We all have.
I did go through because I don't know anything about it. But, you know, I know a little bit from talking with friends and, you know, but like whatever, you know, like you've seen people commit suicide because they've been shamed in the media and stuff. And you're just like, hold on, we're all doing that, aren't we? What did they do? What? Like, I don't know. You know, we all know the things that we do where you think other people don't know that, you know, or whatever. You know, we're all human beings, man. We're all human beings. And the more we realize that, and I think what you need for that to happen is, you know, it's not some stern lecture from some fucking head teacher. It's feeling the opposite. It's feeling a bit of compassion for your fellow man. You know, someone who you judge and you kind of ridicule. All of a sudden, you see them as an actual person, and it feels better than judging and ridiculing them. You know, and that's how people will change eventually, I guess, like on an individual level. Who knows whether that could expand? Who knows? None of us really know. And my fear tells me it can't happen. It's just too big a thing. Yeah. But I have little pockets in my life where I've seen it work. A true democracy at work. And it can happen, you know, where if people have got like a common peril or a common cause, you will be amazed at the people that come together. Mm. I've heard stories about, like, you know, if people have a common peril, like, you know, like 12-step fellowships or things, you know, and there's stories that are in Northern Ireland, you had people from the Catholic and the Protestant sides coming together. I remember when Barry McGuigan fought for the world title, and like, because they all wanted a hero and he was it at the time. And you had people from the, you know, these people were killing each other and every day and yet they'd all come together for that common purpose. And we all need a common purpose, and it's right there in front of us, really. It's life, you know, but it's hard to make that your goal, your common purpose, when everyone else is telling you that ultimately, in one form or another, it's money.
Yeah.
It's money, you know, like that's what our security is. Now, money is our God. You know, I'm not saying whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. It is what it is. It's quite brilliant. Whoever invented it is, you know, clearly it's a genius system in many ways and whatever. But whether we like it or not, that is our God. That's the thing. That's the thing that we go.
It's a shame that something like that just makes the world go round, isn't it? And everyone thinks that that's the root to the happiness. But, you know, sadly, in a lot of cases, it's proven that it isn't, you know.
Well, the truth is, I guess, really, ultimately, it's balance, isn't it? This is what I'm trying to say. There is no virtuous life where we're all going to float around in robes and bowing at each other. And you know what I mean? Like, but
unless the right job comes in and we're asked to audition for it, and then we'll do it. Floating around.
The truth is, it's balance, isn't it? There's never going to be a world of fear, because we're human beings and we need fear in many ways. But it's balance. It's keeping it balanced with faith and remembering that there's lots of wonderful things out there. There's amazing things. For everything that this paper tells you about knife crime and this and that, what they're not telling you is the million stories of good things that happened in the world that day. You know?
It's like now every day you're hearing X amount of people have died from this horrible disease, and that is horrible.
Yeah.
But what they're not printing is how many people are walking out of that hospital healthy.
Yeah.
You know? And that's true. There's so many people, you know, surviving this and carrying on and stuff, but unfortunately, the thing that sells the papers, the thing that keeps the news channels going, like you said before, is how many people have died from it today.
Yeah.
And that's horrible. Yeah, and one death is so too many, but...
Yeah.
I think we live in a society where people, certain people, feel that, like, they that people thrive off that sort of information more than they would a bit of good. People thrive off the bad news more than they would the good news. Do you know what I mean? And it's kind of a sad reality.
Sorry, Tom, I butted right
into you. No, go on, mate.
I butted right into you. Yeah, go on.
No, I'm just saying that it's a sad reality that some certain people would share a bad news story quicker than they would share a good news story on social media, wouldn't they?
Yeah. And you know, and in some ways that's, you know, and we're all capable of it. But that's the first step is recognizing that we are. Like everything that we loathe in other people, we are capable of it on some level. It's hard to describe that without specific examples. But if you said to me now about, I don't know, Trump or something, like, and you know, an easy target, something that we all go, that's bad, or, you know, on some level, if we got down to it and looked at it and worked out what it was about him that you didn't like, it's because ultimately it's reminding you of something in yourself, ultimately, whether it's self-centeredness, or a self of, you know, it's because somewhere in your little secret life or your head or whatever, you know, that's who you are as well. We're all the same, man. It's like, in many ways, like, you know, it's painfully predictable, really. We're all the same. We're all the same.
Yeah.
If you see someone, and sometimes it's scary for us. It just is scary to accept that that's part of us as well. It is scary. Like, we'd much rather go, you know, point the finger at them and go, wow, they're just bad. They're different. They're different, and you're like, they're not, man. They're just struggling today, and misbehaving as a result. And that's the thing. Like, I do believe it's too hard for me to get me ready. You know, like, I just try and do it as much as I can in my daily life, and I fail more than I succeed. I guess maybe, I don't know, but it's lovely to have a bit of that balance. It's lovely to have a bit of serenity every now and again, a bit of peace and quiet, a bit of compassion. It feels good. That's the problem, right? Is, well, not the problem, the opposite. That's the mad thing about it, is it feels good. You know, if you're able to, you know, and there's nothing to it, really, like spirituality and that. This is the other thing at the moment as well, where, like, you know, everyone's spouting on about spirituality and attaching it almost to sort of some, you know, the price of your flipping yoga mat or something. It's like a fashion accessory. And it's like, no, it ain't. Spirituality is going to making someone a cup of tea, you know?
Mm.
Giving that person a phone call that you don't really want to ring just to see how they are. Try doing it. Not because, like, some pompous ass is telling you that you've got to do it to be part of some sort of spiritual group. Because it feels good. I'll tell you, the most spiritual people are right now. Like, it ain't people floating around on a amount of, you know, like the you know, or people who are online telling you that you how to live your life. You know, the most spiritual people right now are mothers. They're nurses, you know. They're turning up and doing it, man. You know, anonymously in most cases. Like, that's the other great thing about spirituality is when people do it anonymously. Someone said,
yeah,
spiritual thing you can do today is go out and do something kind for someone without getting found out about it. If you get found out, it doesn't count.
Yeah.
Try it. Go out and do something kind for someone today. It can be small, it can be large, it can be whatever. But just go out and do something anonymously for someone and they won't even know you've done it. See how you feel later when you're sitting indoors. Trust me. You know, it's the opposite of how a troll feels when he's just put out some horrible, spiteful thing. That poor soul, that troll, whatever, trust me, they ain't in a good place.
No.
That ain't a nice place to be in. It really ain't. Because we've all done it on some level or another. Like, I've never trolled, I don't think I, but you know, like, I've never, that's not, just not my thing. Like, I'm, you know, but on some level or another, we've all been spiteful at some time in our life. Or we've all,
yeah.
Gossip. Gossip's another thing, like, you know, we've all at some point had a gossip about someone
that
feels good and they've got on our nerves or whatever. Doesn't feel good. Karmically, on some level, you know that you're breaking the rules of life in some spiritual cosmos. I can't believe I'm saying it, but, you know,
but I agree though. I agree.
Something
totally.
Kind for someone and you don't get found out about it just for today. See how you feel later. It's a lovely feeling. It's a lovely, lovely feeling, you know? Like, yeah.
I think with that advice, honestly, that is the perfect place to end. If you are listening to this podcast, as Johnny's just said, if you can go out safely, obviously, because of what's going on, and, you know, check on a neighbour or, like you say, ring that friend that you've probably not spoke to for a while.
Send
or
a text. Or
even if you don't go out. I'll tell you the hardest thing is to ring someone up and make it completely about them, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's not like, you know, you don't get into what you're going through and your troubles for the day. It's hard. It's hard, man. This is an exercise here. Try it, people. Like,
I'm going to write them down.
If you're a self-centered git like me, like, all I want to do is ring up and talk about me. <You know?
laughs> No, that's not
up,
true.
To ring your mum up and actually say, how are you? You know, like, what's going on in your life? And insist that actually it's about her, you know? And it's a lovely thing, man. It's a really nice thing. Yeah. You know? I'm going to try it myself later. I'll foul.
Yeah. I'm going to give it a go. No, I think we should all give it a go.
Yeah.
It's been amazing to listen to you and have your outlook on it all, and just to know how positive you are, and hopefully the people are listening, that, you know, whether you do want to sit down and play a computer game, or whether you do want to sit down and meditate or read a book or anything, you know, if you can take yourself away from what's going on for just an hour a day, you know, I mean, for me, I'm nearly a 30-year-old man, but if I have a game of FIFA on my Xbox, I switch off from the world. You know, I stop thinking about everything terrible that's going on, and I'm focusing on scoring goals. That's all I'm doing. But then that's how I will find my peace for a while. You know, that there is ways of doing it. It's just trying to find the right thing for you, I guess.
Yeah, giving yourself a break. Give yourself a break. We can be very hard on ourselves, you know, and give yourself a break. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wicked.
Cheers, man. Thank you very much, Johnny.
Nice one, mate.
Nice one.
See you later.
Thank you so much. That's amazing. Thank you.
Yeah, cheers, Johnny. Lots of love, mate.
We'll add you into the group as well now. Do that.
Yeah, we'll get you in.
I'll see how I go. I love you both.
See you later, mate.
You too, Johnny.
Thank you.
Mate. Bye.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Yeah, again, like we touched bases in the intro and during the chat, I mean, like we understand it, you know, as much as anybody else, how tough it is, you know, during this time. But I guess all we can do is just take on board a bit of Johnny's advice and just try and keep busy, try and keep active, and appreciate the you know, the times that we're getting to. I mean, I'm spending a lot more time with my family over, like, house party and Zoom and things like that. You know, we're doing a lot of quiz nights and stuff. And, you know, weirdly, I think it's brought a lot of people's relationships closer.
Yeah, definitely. And I, you know, Johnny said something in the chat there about, like, ring someone and try and not make it about you.
Yeah, that's so good, that. So good.
You know, it's something that, like, I've never really thought of before. Like, I will ring my mum or my, you know, my mates and moan, or, you know what I mean? I will. It's just that normal kind of Mancunian thing, you know, you're all right, how's it going? But you don't mean it normally. It's just like, right, I want to talk about my shit day. And I think that was one of the things from the chat that stood out to me was...
Yeah. It was because you do it, don't you? I guess when I make a phone call, if I ring someone, you do that, don't you? You just say, are you all right? Mm. You don't go, are you all right? Are you all right? Do you know what I mean? It's just like a thing that you just do. And I tend to think that when I'm ringing someone, if I'm ringing them, I'm ringing them to moan about something that's going on for me. And you don't really, you know, you don't sort of stop and think about how the other people are feeling sometimes, do you? But I guess that's what good friends are. And I know that Johnny's one of them. That if ever I had any problems, like we touched base on the intro, if ever anything was going on, you know, I don't speak to Johnny every day, but, you know, we'll often send a lovely text and whatnot. And I know that if it was 3 a.m, and if me and Charlotte had an argument, say, I know for a fact that Johnny had answered the phone. So I guess we're kind of blessed that we've got these sort of friends that, and it's the same with you. And I know you'd answer the phone and you know that I'd answer it. So I guess that's sort of, we're relying on friends at this time, aren't we?
Yeah, that's it, man. Friends and family, like say, and just the little things, man. Just the little things like that you can look on and go, oh, like, just make you happy, do you know what I mean? I wanted to show, about 2 days into, like, the lockdown, I broke my glasses. So on the other podcast, I've not had any glasses on because this is what I was wearing. That taped them up.
Oh, my God, look at them.
So that's what I was, because I can't see things far off. And it was really stressing me out. Got to the point where I was getting headaches and that. And then I literally bought a pair of £19 glasses from Specsavers, rang them up, asked them if they'd still got my prescription, which they did, which was amazing. Even from years ago, I think it was 2017, she said I'd been there. But they were like, it's fine, we'll use that prescription. Ordered some new glasses, instantly felt better.
Yeah.
Just £19. Like,
retail therapy, mate.
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess it is. But then it was kind of like, you know, I don't know. I think these symbolise to me at the beginning, right, the world's going to shit. And I fixed them and I turned around to Emily and I was like, look, if this goes down, how it might go down, a.k.a. apocalypse shit, you're with a survivor. Do you know?
Yeah, but if it went down apocalypse shit, you'd be fucked.
Well, yeah, exactly. But, you know, I think that's what I was thinking. That was my mentality at the beginning. And then slowly started realising that it's not that bad. At the beginning, I genuinely thought this was the end of the world. And then through chatting to you, through doing this podcast with you, through chatting like Johnny and that, like, start to realise that actually it's not that. I mean, it's bad.
No, of course, yeah. I mean, it's like, sorry, go on, mate. Go on.
I have to say, it is bad. You know, there's tragically, the loss of life is incredibly awful. And we should never forget about that. But I think the message here, like we said, is look for the positives in this situation.
Yeah, and you know, there's not a day go by where you don't stop and, you know, and you think about all the people that have lost their lives, not only to coronavirus, but to everything, all the accidents and all, you know, the cancer patients and mental health sufferers and everything. You know, there's always bad things going on in the world. But there is also a lot of good things going on in the world.
Yeah.
And if you choose to, I know some people don't choose to, but you know, if some people can get swallowed up in the bad news. And again, with the media, which tend to do that a lot, is they're constantly sharing bad news. You know, people can drive themselves insane. And, you know, I guess trying to find the positives in what's going on, i.e., you know, you're seeing these stories about a 93-year-old lady who's walking out of the hospital after beating coronavirus. That's the kind of news that I want.
106-year-old the other day.
106-year-old. You know what I mean? That's the shit that I want. And that's the shit that I'll share on Facebook.
Yeah.
You know, because that's seeing that makes me feel better. So I'm not going to share that there was, you know, 900 deaths yesterday or 800 deaths yesterday, because that's sharing the bad news, and
yeah,
you know, that's enough to put people on a downer, I think. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I mean, you've got to be careful to, you know, to remember them.
Of course, yeah.
I get exactly what you're saying. I do think sometimes the media is focusing heavily on that, you know, and I do. I love it. Like I think today, this morning, I saw someone share, you know, there was like how many worldwide, how many cases have recovered from it, and it just gives you that little bit of like, oh yeah, oh yeah.
I suppose it's about being selective and choosing what you want to hear and what you want to share, isn't it? It's like,
yeah,
you've got to be really careful, because you know, for the people who might not necessarily want to know about how many people died yesterday because they're really struggling with it, I don't want to be the person that's sharing that sort of information. But what I want to do is I want to share that there's an 106-year-old lady who's just beaten coronavirus. Because then if someone's struggling, that'll hopefully make them feel better. Which, again, is, I guess, what Johnny was saying in the podcast. It's, we've just got to try and stay positive and, you know, and try and... I mean, I've got TikTok now. I've downloaded TikTok. Because, yeah. but there's no terrible news on there. It's just people having fun.
Yeah,
and that's my favourite thing at the minute. I spend a lot more time on TikTok than I do any social media at the minute, because it's full of people trying their hardest to enjoy life, finding the light in being at home, you know, doing little challenges like me with the golf balls in the back garden and the footballs and just having a bit of fun, which is, for me, is that's the best medicine at the minute, is trying your hardest to have fun at home, see and appreciate what you've got at home as well. Do you know what I mean?
100%. And same with me, like, I've, you know, like I said earlier, you know, the other day I had a bit of a downer where I just got stressed about, like, I've not been out of the house really, and
human, you know, contact, man.
Yeah, and it is hard that, like, I said this to my wife, you know, when she's at work, like, the only other person I speak to is a 5-year-old, and that is amazing, but also stressful. But I decided to try and put that in a positive note, and I was saying to you the other day, me and Phoebe are going to do a little side podcast.
Yeah.
We recorded
just for the listeners. Andy's ditching me. He's going to poach all you listeners, and he's replacing me with a 5-year-old girl called Phoebe. So it was nice while it lasted.
No, but it's cute. Like you say, like I'm showing her films that I loved as a kid, and then we're going to review them. So like we did one yesterday where we watched Drop Dead Fred.
Oh, what a film!
Exactly. it's a 12, but I'm showing it to her. Because I watched it when I was 5.
Yeah, you're not causing that well,
man. It didn't do me any damage.
No.
But yeah. So, yeah, I guess it's that thing, in it. It's find the positives. Try and, you know, do something. If creative, if not, if you're not a creative person, that's fine. Just go for a walk.
Play FIFA. play FIFA, play Call of Duty. And you know what I found? Grand Theft Auto is the closest thing to real life that I've got at the minute. Online on Grand Theft Auto, what you got to do is you have to buy your cars. And you have to pay to get them insured. You've got to buy an apartment. You can go to the casino. I was playing poker in the casino yesterday. Do you know what I mean? And it's like weird little things like that. I was on a roulette table. Weird little things like that are just like, you know, we was just sort of, me and Charlotte found fun in that. There's a little thing in the casino where you can gamble on the horses, little virtual horse racing. And me and Charlotte are like, obviously GTA money, not real money. But like we was laughing our heads off at that. And I thought, just for 10 minutes, you know, we forgot about everything else that was going on in the world. So, you know, even if it is playing computer games or it is being in the back garden of a football or a golf ball, but, you know, it's just try your hardest to appreciate the things that you've got. Do you know what I mean? And I guess that's what the message of this podcast was, really, which is why we decided it's a great time to release it.
Yeah. Well, that's us, guys. So, we hope you've enjoyed it, as always. And we'll be back next week. With another great guest.
Yeah.
Got a lot of great guests lined up. So, thank you.
Yeah, cheers.
Stay safe.
Be seeing you.